This is Lifemint.com and you're listening to the Editor's Podcast with Anil Padmanabhan, Executive Editor, Mint, and R. Sukumar, Editor, Mint.
Yesterday we were discussing how if a couple of years ago someone had told us that India would move to a new indirect tax regime and announce a divestment or privatization of Air India in the same week, we would have told that person that he was smoking something. And that's what's happened this week. So it's a pretty revolutionary week. We're going to speak about GST to begin with, because I think this is by far the biggest tax reform this country has seen since independence.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's no two ways about it. This is, whichever way you look at it, it is a far-reaching reform. But to me, there are about two, three things I think we should bear in mind, which is why the significance of it. One, this is a fundamental change in the way we tax. It is now a destination tax. So previously what would happen was it was on the point of trade, point of manufacture. So which is why people keep talking about tax on tax. And it led to a cascading and, you know, the consequences of that. To duck the tax, you will divert and lead to a distortion. So completely interfered with the market play. And with this Indian economy moving through a market economy, a GST was the perfect example. And second, of course, is which you know, the new federal polity, as it were, you know, that there's a new relationship between the center and states, which has never happened before. Probably for the first time, the states are now equal stakeholders in policy making. Otherwise, like previously in, say, 1991, you would read about the economic reforms if you're the finance minister or some state in the newspapers the next day. But today, you're actually going to be here tonight in Delhi, present in Central Hall, be part of the
process. You're part of it. And of course, the third thing, which is the obvious thing, also the motive for doing GST, is the fact that you're replacing multiple taxes across the country with a fairly simple tax structure. It's not as simple as what it could have been. But like you said, you know, to me, the fact that you're actually charging it at the consumption end, at that end, and not taxing intermediates is a big, big change. And I don't think that's really sunken yet. There's been a lot of talk over the last few days on implementation issues. And my own view on implementation issues is that, you could have done this on 1st September or 1st December, and you would have still had the same implementation issues. Because it's one of those things that you just have to do. And personally, I quite like the intent and the purpose that this government has shown in pushing through GST, because it's exactly the kind of intent and purpose that many governments have lacked when it comes to key reforms. And I'm hoping that it's the kind of thing that can be carried forward.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it also gives credit to the GST Council, because that is the kind of new institution which in all this excitement about GST rollout we have ignored largely has been the council, that it is where all the decisions are getting made, which is where the states, like we previously said, are key stakeholders in the whole process. So when we look forward at this rollout, like you said, we could theoretically be ready for the perfect GST. But I liked what Jayant Sinha on earlier Facebook Live with us just 2 days ago said. He compared it to an Indian wedding, and which is actually a nice analogy, because in any Indian wedding, no matter how well you plan, there's always some element of chaos or an unexpected
thing.
But eventually everything falls in place. So that's not being facetious about such an important thing, but it's a nice analogy to explain to people how complicated, and to quote the one thing we often use, moving parts. I don't think anything of such scale with so many moving parts has ever been attempted in the history of this country. So to expect that you will go to sleep in a VAT era and wake up in a GST era, I think is expecting too much. So yes, there will be hiccups, which I think the finance minister has been very candidly also admitted that there could be hiccups. But the good news is that they are prepared for it. So they, in that sense, you're only blindsided, but at least you are ready for a plan with a plan B.
I think two observations here, right? The first one is, I'm just hoping that these disruptions are very temporary, right? Because I don't think at this point in time we can afford any disruption which is more than 3 weeks or a month. maximum. So especially because we are past the slump that happened after demonetization, things are looking up. We are actually beginning to see some pickup in investment activity. So I'm hoping that there won't be a slowdown. But this is also a good time to do it, right? Because the sales are going to happen in around the festive season, and they'll happen in September, October. So they will provide a natural, a boost to sales as it's going to happen.
Also, no, Sukumar, this demonetization you mentioned, it did two things for us. I mean, in the collateral fallout, as it were. One, it has shown an incredible resilience of the Indian economy, you know, which none of us expected that the few weeks that demonetization went through, the kind of shock and hurt that it caused to the economy, nobody expected a recovery this decent. The other is, I think it's raised the threshold of pain for, as it were, for the Indian economy. In the sense, I think it'll take much more to shock the Indian economy into a real lull for something worse than demonetization. So hopefully the word here is not disruption, it would be dislocation. If it's a disruption, we need to worry. The dislocation,
You don't really need to worry. And then the second issue, of course, is what we've seen with many companies, or in the case of many industries, which is only to be expected. There's some amount of destocking that's happened in the run-up to GST, especially because I think the wholesalers and the retailers don't want to take any chances. But the companies are quite confident, and the companies we've spoken to are quite confident that they can restock in the first 15 days and just push stuff into the pipeline. And as long as they manage to do that, of course, as far as pushing stuff into the pipeline, the biggest beneficiaries are is really in the area of logistics, right? Because as far as your distribution strategy is concerned, you don't need to have multiple warehouses because various states have various issues and all that. You could pretty much serve the northern states out of one, the southern states out of one, the eastern states out of another one, 3-4 huge warehouses. Economies of scale are tremendous. And the changes that GST has brought about in logistics, I think it's really going to speed up the whole process of transferring things from point A to point B, and more importantly, bring down costs. And I think those are significant gains that we've not factored in yet.
No, absolutely. This logistics, as our slogan says, one nation, one tax, that economic unity of India has never happened before. Whenever you move goods, like the example you took of logistics, you're moving through actually almost 32 sovereign territories. So which is where, you know, you're slapped with taxes, we talked about the cascading. Forget the tax part of it, the kind of dislocation it caused in delivery. So logistic benefits are going to be enormous. I totally agree.
Second big reform, I think we should now talk about Air India, because GST, I think we can keep talking about it till midnight today, or maybe even later. Air India was a surprise, right, in many ways. 6 months ago, no one knew it was on the thing. There was a chance remark that the finance minister made, turned out to be not so chance. And then the next thing you know, there's a proposal, it's gone to the cabinet has cleared it, and now an airline has expressed interest in actually going out and buying this. So I think they're moving very fast on this. Still don't know whether something will come out of it. What is your view on Air India?
I don't know, I'm a little torn, because when Air India doesn't, and it's not just Air India, if you look at any public sector's undertaking, they're in a very odd position. They do a certain market economy based transaction, and they do a non-market economy based transaction. The non-market economy is, of course, one big thing is transporting the Prime Minister of India, President of India, and politicians all over the world, you know, internationally. But you also do a lot of bailouts, particularly in situations like in the Gulf operation.
That's right.
Also, they connect in areas where I don't think Indian private sector airlines on their own will go through. So there is a certain social component to it, but then there the larger share is the market component. So when you look at the market component, I have no qualms. I think it's a very good idea that Air India is being privatized, because eventually it is a huge asset. I mean, the kind of global footprint it has a huge legacy. It's a great opportunity for some smart manager to come in and fix. So as you rightly said, a lot of private airlines are failing. But I am curious to ask you that, do you really think these private airlines have it in their balance sheets to acquire something like Air India with or without the debts?
See, the debt can't be acquired, right? I mean, it's 50,000 odd crore. So the debt is out of the equation, and I'm hoping the land will also be out of the equation, because the minute you put land into the equation, it just messes up the whole thing. Even in the limited record of disinvestment in this country, we know that the kind of controversy that emanates if a little bit of land is transferred. So I think land should be off the things. I agree with you. I think if you look at it purely from the operations perspective and from the infrastructure perspective, Air India, despite its losses, and I never thought I would say this, is actually a tremendous buy, right? I mean, for any airline. Question is, how much, right? What would it be worth? I don't know. I have no idea what the valuation is. But let's look at the valuation of this new company that's been formed a few years back, which now has British Airways, it has Iberia, it has everything else, right? Which is a conglomerate. Its market value is around $12, $13 billion. What is IndiGo's market value? IndiGo's market value will be around $10 billion, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less. I haven't looked at the numbers. So Air India will obviously be worth a lot more than that because the bilaterals are worth a lot more. The infrastructure is worth a lot more. They have got a fleet. They already have rights to fly to 41 international destinations, which is huge. Biggest share of passenger traffic out of the country. Could have been much higher had we not forsaken some of our rights and made it easier for other airlines to fly in. Any acquisition of this sort has to be on the basis of debt, right? Which means the airline that is acquiring Air India is going to have to take on huge debt to acquire Air India. How much debt? Let's pluck a number from the sky, right? Because in the absence of valuation,
debt,
that's what...
Their debt has two components. What, or the 50,000 crore, right. 30,000 is linked to the aircraft.
Exactly.
So you're basically talking about 20,000 crores.
No, but let's look at the value. Let's just pluck a number from the air. And this could be completely wrong. Let's say $20 billion, right? I mean, hypothetical number. Can $20 billion be funded? Why not? Right? I mean, because I'm still convinced that the government is going to keep some amount of stake. We don't know the modalities. Let's assume the government keeps 49%. Airline coming in has to buy 51%. So 51% effective valuation, your $20 billion comes down to $10 billion. How easy is it in this day and age for an airline to raise $10 billion? Depends on how you will use Air India's operations. What kind of cash flow can you generate? Can you generate the kind of cash flow that can service that debt? Mathematically, you can. The difficulty in airlines is always about the operational perspective, right? A big variable for them will be fuel costs. But fuel costs are expected to be benign for a few more years, right?
Also, this is a great time. Global aviation is on a real boom.
Exactly.
So in that sense, the timing of Air India what privatization is brilliant.
I was just looking at a report that Airbus put out 10 days ago, 20th June, looking at aircraft demand over the next 20 years. And they're saying over the next 20 years, around 35,000 commercial aircraft, each with seating capacity of at least 100, will be sold. Out of this 35,000, 41% will be sold in Asia, the bulk to China and India, right? So you're in the right place. It's a great market. And the point you were making on flying to remote locations and other things, I think the government, through schemes like Udaan, is actually making that possible, right? I mean, the Udaan scheme offers airlines incentives to fly there or subsidies to fly there.
You took an Udaan.
I took an Udaan flight.
How was it?
Oh, it was, I mean, it was just like any other flight, but it's 2,000 rupees, whereas I did one way by train, and the train cost me a little bit more than the flight did, right? Sure, it's not a market-based solution, but it is a solution nevertheless. It removes the pressure on Air India completely from having to fly to these locations because no one else is, because now the other airlines are quite happy to do that. And I think the minute you start having these smaller aircraft flying to regional airports. India also has a big regional airport infrastructure building effort underway. And then you have these large aircraft servicing. You'll have a nice, efficient hub and spoke structure.
But one big unpredictable, what do you do with the labor?
That's right.
It is grossly overemployed.
And has at least seven labor unions. It has seven unions.
So how do you deal with it?
That is tough.
In that sense, a very politically very tough decision this government has taken, because it's not going to be easy sailing, because, you know, this is also a government which has been accused of being the suit boot ki sarkar. So the opposition has already once previously targeted you.
And the unions did make some noise already, right? I mean, they've started making some noises already.
So politicians will love to fish into this, for sure.
Someone wants to know about what the perks are because of the government involvement for any private airline acquiring Air India. I mean, we just discussed the perks. I mean, not the perks, but the benefits of acquiring Air India. But, you know, I think even the union can be managed. Bigger things have been accomplished. Make them shareholders, right? I mean, make them shareholders in the airline. Give them shares.
But then that means either the government has to reduce its own share, or the incoming promoter will have to shrink their share. But I don't see any incoming promoter willing to accept the existing staff strength.
The debt is a huge issue.
Stumbling block.
But the workforce is also a huge issue. But these are things that can be resolved, right? I mean, accumulated losses of 50,000 crores, where, as you point out, 30,000 crores has to do with
the aircraft.
Yeah, so you...
But that's a very interesting point you make. I mean, the optimism that you are exhibiting. Say, even 5 years ago, we could not have had this conversation, that a privatization could be resolved without each side being accused of sellout and things like that. In many ways, this is also reflective of the kind of distance the Indian economy has traveled from, say, even 10 years ago to now, that you can actually have a civic debate about this instead of it being reduced to some rhetorical flourishes. As yet, it has not happened. And I'm really surprised because the government announced it just this week and the reactions have been pretty muted.
Yeah,
it's a good point you're making because previously there was this concept of, oh, they're selling the family jewels. Now you're realizing that, oh, these are not actually jewels. Two, there are other families that have emerged, and these are private companies, which are doing very well. Like today, the most successful airline in the country is IndiGo, right? I mean, you look at valuation, you look at profitability. SpiceJet has done exceedingly well. And I think they've shown how an airline which was once a basket case, and I know, and I say this, I use this pejorative with full understanding of what the term means. I remember once we carried a report on their suspension of activities, right? Mm. There were a couple of days when they actually had to suspend their flight operations. They were going through a tremendous financial crisis 2.5 years ago. You look at the distance that that airline has traveled. It's back to profitability. It's consistently making money, giving IndiGo a run for its money in some areas, including on-time service and things like that. So there are private sector airlines which have emerged, which are, one, run well, two, have shown that they can create wealth. So it's not as if the family jewels are being sold. If by transferring ownership of Air India, you can help this brand regain some of its past glory, then I think that would be a huge achievement. The government gets a sticky asset off its books. Of course, like you said, the key issue is what do you do with all those people? That is something that has to be tackled,
I guess.
Anyway, on that note, it's been a big week, or it will be a big week because the GST announcement is, the shift to the big night tonight. And we will all come back next week. And next week's Editor's Podcast will happen under the GST regime, right?
Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at Livemint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook.